Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
The Rue Papers. A bad-tempered librarian, Beatrice, is sent down to the basement to record the papers of an old society. The more she reads, the more she realizes that this society investigated the paranormal. She finds stories of ghosts, poltergeists, seances that went wrong, horrors that killed the people around them, and an old rivalry, a battle against those that would let the dead come back and those that are trying to stop it. But all this was a long time ago. Surely, reading the stories now can't make anything happen. Surely, the dead won't come back. The more Beatrice reads, the more she realizes some stories should never be told. The Rue Papers, a paranormal horror podcast, available now.
Darkcast Network, welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency. And thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to another episode. Today we have the further adventures of the Scarlet Queen. If you enjoy this ocean adventure, please be sure to check out Volume 1 in the archives. And also let me know through the comments on Spotify, my email, or my social media. All those links can be found in the description. And as always, if you enjoy this podcast, if you find yourself coming back for more, please consider following, reviewing, and rating. Now with all that, please enjoy the show.
Entry, the Ketch Scarlet Queen. Position, 158 degrees west, 22 degrees, 21 minutes north. Gyrocompass course, 290. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, cleared port of Honolulu at 3:30 a.m. without lights to avoid harbor and police officials. Reason for secrecy, the report from the White Jade Buddha. On the 13th day out of San Francisco, with the constant trade still flowing in over the starboard quarter, the Scarlet Queen stood in through Kaiwi Channel, past Coco and Diamond Head, and eased into Honolulu Harbor. I'd planned on finding dockage off 4th Street near the shopping district where I could take on water and food stores in a hurry, pick up my payroll and instructions from Kang's Honolulu contact and head out. But the section was jammed with merchantmen, so we nosed past Sand Island under power and into Kapalama Basin, where we tied up under the stern of an aging but busy Victory ship. We'd noticed the big diesel yacht that had entered the basin in our wake, but we didn't pay any attention to it until it anchored just off our port beam and a dinghy lifter pulled up alongside. My chief mate, Red Gallagher, caught the hail.
Ahoy! The Scarlet Queen!
Ahoy, the boat! What's your business?
Roslyn Bradbury, master of the Rockahunga. Do I have your permission aboard?
Not mine. How about yours, skipper?
You stay where you are.
Huh? What's that? Oh, it's still in quarantine?
I didn't say so, but it'll do.
Well, then, if Muhammad cannot come to the mountain, sir, let the mountain come to Muhammad.
Talk English or cast off. What do you want?
The pleasure of your company at tea aboard the Rockahunga. Yourself and your first officer, sir. No need for a formal acceptance. I never take no for an answer. I shall expect you promptly at 5.
What kind of bilge was that?
I say let's take him up on that invitation, skipper.
I say that tea smells like poison.
Well, you expected trouble in Honolulu, so it's better to have poison hail you from a dinghy than run into a knife in a dark shoreside alley. What do you say? The poison on a yacht where you can see it, or a knife in a dark alley?
Okay, Red, break out your white linen jacket. We'll try the poison.
And so Mutual continues the voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in the strange voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
My instinct was to turn down Bradbury's invitation, because I knew that Constantino's machine was out to stop the voyage of the Scarlet Queen, to use every trick in the business to keep me from the $10 million prize Kang was sending me after. They'd killed once in San Francisco when Gallagher was on their payroll, and now after Red had switched his loyalties to my side, the Bradbury hail would be another move. But a few minutes before 5, Gallagher and I dropped into our small boat and sculled the 50 yards to the good ship Rockahunga. A Kanaka crewman took our painter and made us fast to the ladder. We hunched our shoulder holsters into easy positions and went aboard. We walked across immaculate teak wood toward the main house. Just before we reached it, something under a deck cleat caught my eye. I picked it up. It was a small opal earring in a gold setting.
Welcome aboard, gentlemen. Come in out of the sun. Tea's getting cold. We'll make the formalities brief. I'd like to introduce my nephew. Your name, please?
I'm Carney. This is my first officer, Mr. Gallagher.
Splendid.
Pleased to meet you. Why don't you park your hardware outside? This is a tea party.
No, Cyril. Certainly the gentlemen have come armed. All manner of danger in these latitudes. Sharks, foreigners, natives.
All right, clam, blubber, clam. Tell them what you want and send them back to the rowboat. You're boring the gentleman.
Yes, of course. It just so happens that I do have a proposition to place before you. In spite of the apparent grandeur with which you find me surrounded, gentlemen, I find myself temporarily embarrassed. Well, financially, that
is. It means he's broke.
That's tough. I've been there myself.
Yes. Well, naturally, you're thinking that I can sell this yacht for more than enough to carry me, but I can't in Honolulu for reasons which I won't go into. As a matter of fact, I am taking great risks in even anchoring here, but I had no choice.
What are you handing me? You picked us up off Sand Island and followed us into the basin. Why us?
Why, the very impression you make. Your ship's well loaded, a craft that will handle well under jib and mizzen for intricate island sailing.
Yeah, along with 50 other catches in this harbor.
Yes. Well, now, Mr. Carney, the point is this. I am, shall we say, persona non grata in this city.
He means he's hot in Honolulu. Last time he was here, he got a skin full and asked his dame on the ship.
Cyril! That will be enough, Cyril. To continue, I must raise enough money to fuel my voyage back to the States. Neither I, nor, if I may say so, Cyril, can go ashore.
Yeah, but it was no dame.
In my travels, I have collected a number of valuable objets d'art. Among them, this rare white jade representation of the Arakanese Buddha, one of the most sacred objects of the Orient. Stolen from the Boangan Temple.
Look, what Blubber's trying to tell you, he's hot. The statue's hot. But there's a certain character in Honolulu who'd pay off good for it. He wants your gents to deliver it for a third of the proceeds. He trusts you. Don't ask me why.
Yes. Nicely put, Cyril. Well, gentlemen, how about it? Do you agree to assist me?
Who's your buyer?
A gentleman of the Oriental persuasion, Lu Chi Shen by name. You will present the object to him, and if he does not instantly recognize its worth, as I believe he will, then kindly direct his attention to the cylindrical marking at its base. This identifies it beyond a shadow of a doubt as the Arakanese Buddha of Boanga. Well, Mr. Carney?
So the tea is all right, Skipper. The guy's in trouble. We got to go ashore anyway.
Okay, Red, pick up the doll. Oh, almost forgot. I found this out on deck. It's an earring.
Oh, an opal. Now, where could that have come from?
Yeah, where?
A cheap little thing. Take it along, Mr. Carney, for luck.
It was dusk when we left the Scarlet Queen to go ashore. By the time we'd reached King Street in the center of town, the tropic night had settled in around the city. Kang and Company's office was closed, so I phoned the home of the manager, Neil Gregson. He told us to meet him there in an hour. We decided to unload Bradbury's hunk of jade and kill the rest of the time in the nearest bar. We found the shop on Canton Street, a few blocks east of King. The sign on the window was in Chinese, but down in the corner in English was the name Lu Ji Shen. It was a typical cluttered Chinese curio shop, dim, smelling of sandalwood. A thin, wrinkled little man looking out of character in occidental clothes and green eye shade was waiting for us behind the counter.
Yes? You wish to buy a Chinese ware?
You Lu Ji Shen?
Yes. Who tell you come here?
Bradbury.
Bradbury? Maybe mistake you come here.
We got something for you. What do you think of that for white jade?
You try to sell that to me? That not jade.
What do you mean it isn't jade?
That Japanese work. Very cheap. No good for me.
Wait a minute. This is a great thing. Where do you say it came from, Skipper?
A temple somewhere. Boanga.
Boanga? No, cannot be Boanga Buddha.
Oh, he says, look on the bottom, Lou. He says, mark there proves.
Oh. Wait, I turn on light. This very strange mark. Very small.
He turned the base of the Buddha toward the light and squinted nearsightedly at a spot of shining metal that was set in the center. He put a jeweler's glass into his left eye and looked again. Then he picked up a penknife and started scraping the tarnish off the metal disc. He didn't finish the job. Didn't make any more noise than a firecracker. There was a little tinkle of broken glass. His body went rigid for a split second and then relaxed. The eyepiece hadn't even shattered. There was a clean hole through it about the size of a .25 caliber slug. The bullet that had killed Lu Ji Shen had entered his left eye from close range. In the shattered pieces of Bradbury's phony Buddha, I found the weapon. It was a simple gadget, a rifle cartridge with a spring mechanism on the firing cap. I'd seen plenty of them on Pacific beachheads during the war. We called them finger mines. It looked like Constantino's work, but I couldn't figure why. Any way you looked at it, it was murder, and we were in too deep to stand still. 20 minutes later, a cab dropped us in front of Neil Gregson's Spanish-style mansion out on the other side of Diamond Head. The air was heavy with the smell of jasmine as we went up the walk to the front entrance. But the perfume that hit us when the door opened was more expensive.
Well, Neil told me a couple of men were coming, but he didn't say it like he should have.
Thanks. Where do we find him?
He had to go out for a while, but he said I could entertain you until he got back. It won't be long.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Come in, won't you? Follow me.
She was easy to follow. She swayed down a few steps and into a sunken living room. From the door, I could see that we weren't the only men she was entertaining. I counted five lounging around the room. Four of them, including a young Oriental with a scarred face, wore well-filled shoulder holsters. The other sat with a carbine across his knees. He was the only one I recognized. It was Bradbury's nephew, Cyril.
Come in, suckers. This could be a friendly get-together.
Sure, what else?
Maybe a little seven-card stud, just to break the ice?
I'll take you up on that, Cyril. We always get a square deal from you.
Oh, I like you, too, Gallagher. How much money you got?
How would you like to spend your time, Mr. Carney?
Kicking myself from here to the equator, thanks.
Come on over to the bar. My name's Claire, and I'll mix you a drink. We'll put the kick in that.
That's probably the truth.
You're so suspicious. Relax. Do something manly, like making a pass at me.
With all your husbands in the room?
Well, that's better anyway, but I'm not married.
Just well supplied with chaperones, huh?
Do you think I need them?
Oh, get off it, will you? You don't need them with me. What is the setup, anyway?
Well, a bunch of fellas just happened to drop in.
Did you come with them, or are you part of the furniture?
I'm engaged to Neil Gregson. You won't like him either.
Mm-hmm. That makes as much sense as anything else.
Isn't that a fact? Is your drink all right?
Yeah. Can't remember when I've enjoyed one more.
I could say the same about you if I were the sarcastic type, but I'm... That must be Neil. Excuse me.
The doorbell did something to the atmosphere in the room. I wasn't quite sure what. Nobody changed their positions. Cyril glanced up and then glanced back at his hole card. Claire walked through the room and up the steps. She looked through the open grill, turned back to the room, and held up one finger. Then she opened the door. The figure of a man stood silhouetted in the doorway for just an instant, and then... Every gun in the room opened up on him. The shock knocked him half off the porch, and he lay there.
Some people never learn, do they?
You really take chances, don't you? You got real guts, sir.
Stop it, Skipper. It's their fault.
He never got his hands out of his pockets.
I'll ask your advice next time, Connie, but for now, come up and stay alive, huh? You, Gallagher, on your feet. You're going with us.
Good idea. We can finish that game at stud.
Wait a minute. What's the deal?
It's a payoff, Connie, for Gallagher's double cross in Frisco. You know what I mean? Okay, let's clear out.
I felt like a man on a yard square island. From where I stood, there was no place to turn. Cyril's talk about Red's double cross added up to Constantino. I was sure of that. And it wasn't hard to figure how they'd pay off Gallagher for signing on with me. So far, Honolulu wasn't living up to the travel folders. It was all blind alleys. And in each one, there was a dead man. I went to the door, dragged the body inside, and locked myself in with him. I pulled out his wallet. It was Gregson, all right, but any information he was to give me was as dead as he was. That still held even after I found an envelope in his inside coat pocket that had my name on it. 2 hours ago, it would have led to Kang's instructions. Now it didn't lead any place. It said, Luigi Shen is Kang's man. You're to meet him at 11:45 tonight. I walked a few blocks over to Coa Avenue and hailed a cab. It dropped me on Canton Street. It was about 10, and I hoped that the police were through with Lou's curio shop. The dim light was on and no one was in sight. I went in. It was not only open, it was open for business. There wasn't a sign that a murder had been committed there. And another aged Chinese face rose up out of the shadows behind the counter.
You wish buy Chinese ware?
Who are you?
I am Jia Cheng.
You do business now, tonight?
You wish buy? I help you.
No, I mean... Luigi Shen.
Luigi Shen, not here.
I know it. That's what I mean. You do business after what happened tonight?
Luigi Shen, not here.
Were the police here?
Many police. Many men all want Luigi Shen. He not here. He go 2-3 days.
I got an idea you're talking my language, Chao. Did you see him get killed?
Luigi Shen, not here.
Look, Joe, you know Kang and Son, Shanghai?
No, sabe.
You know name Scarlet Queen?
No, sabe. Other man are same.
What other man? Fat man in white suit, maybe come with police? Look, Joe, I'm captain on Scarlet Queen. I work for Kang and Son.
No, sabe. Fat man, say same.
He was lying. Look here. This paper, it say, Philip Carney, Master, Ketch, Scarlet Queen. You read English?
No, read.
And look here, this letter from Kang and Son in Chinese. I was supposed to give it to Lu Jishen, but I didn't know it until it was too late.
You come along me.
He padded down the other side of the counter and I followed him. We went through a door at the back of the shop and into the living quarters. Zhao bent over a carved camphor wood chest. And when he straightened up, he had a bamboo tube and a thick envelope in his hand. Both of them were from Kang. The envelope held a beautiful, thick bundle of $500 bills and a piece of rice paper, and the tube carried my instructions for finding the contact in Kobe, Japan, and a list of numbers that could have been soundings or elevations. They were to be memorized, the paper destroyed.
You're savvy.
I savvy.
Kang, he most wise man.
You aren't so bad yourself, Joe. You work good trick on Bradbury.
Yes, good trick, all right.
The police don't know Lou was killed?
No person, no. I clean up very fast. No person see him, only you. Along with the one with red hair and me. To all other person, Liu Jishan, go away.
Believe me, I hope he has a good trip. Zhao, you help me more?
Yeah.
Bradbury took the one with red hair away. Unless I find, maybe he goes same place Lu Jishen. Mm. You know where in Honolulu those men go?
Honolulu, very big.
Look, one of them was Chinese boy. Knife scar across here. Mm. Know all Chinese boys?
I know the one.
You know what place he go? Any house saloon? What place he meet friend?
No friend. America very bad for that Chinese boy.
I know it, Joe. I'll try and take care of it for you. Maybe beat Americans' heads together, huh?
That place name, Bomb House. Street name, Canal Street. Very bad.
Yeah, very good. Joe, you're a beautiful guy. You're the first thing I've seen in Honolulu that I'd like to take home with me. The Palm House on Canal Street was the kind of a place the police find at the end of a vice drive. It was a two-story building that covered its windows with bamboo screens to hide its activities from those lucky enough to be outside and a lousy view from those stupid enough to be inside. The only healthy thing about the place were the two fat palm trees that gave it its name. I took a final breath of fresh night air and went in. It was a big place and crowded, and the atmosphere was thick with smoke, and the band was loud. The hula dancers that were on stage have been doing the same thing 40 years too long, and it improved their act with a few tricks from Minsky's. I got 3 feet inside the door and got a typical welcome.
Hello, big boy. You're meeting a friend? Well, I do.
Later, gorgeous. Later.
Later, my back. I'm not the kind that goes to waste.
I kicked and shouldered my way through every complexion in the color chart, navigating a course toward the bar by dead reckoning and the sense of smell. There was some space opening at the end of the bar. I stopped to order a drink, but the bartender was out of sight. I turned around, and that's when I saw them. The first one I spotted was Gallagher. He was at a table, relaxed and nursing a glass. Sitting across from him was the woman, Claire. Cyril and the rest were spread out and they were getting to their feet. Then I realized why that crowd was so hard to fight through. I was the only one heading in. The rest of them smelled trouble and were fighting their way out. I put my back to the bar and leaned on my elbows. Gallagher looked at me once. Then he grinned and moved his chair so his back was to me. That made it complete. The trap and a sellout from him.
Funny thing about double crosses, Connie.
Not so funny.
You're the only one that isn't laughing. You want to talk sense or fall down?
The gun's in your hand, not mine.
Yeah, well, let's try sense. You went back to Lu Jishen's. You stayed there for a while. You talked to Lu Jishen.
Lu Jishen, not here.
Shut up. All we want is what he gave you or told you.
That makes it simple. Lu Jishen, not here.
I said shut up.
What do you think was in that booby trap you sent to him? Birthday greetings? He's dead.
Quit it, Connie. The cops say he's alive.
Argue with them, then, not me.
If you like this, go ahead. Be stupid. It ain't hurting me.
Well, that's because you got guts, Cyril. Great guts!
I hit him, somebody threw two shots, and like at a signal, the place went pitch dark. I dropped flat on the floor and stayed there. Automatic splashed out of the blackness, the splinters from the bar rained down on me. Then the place went silent. I lay there quietly waiting, afraid to give them my position by firing back. I heard the scrape of someone sliding my way and snapped the safety catch on my automatic. Then I smelled the perfume. Claire put both hands on my face to show me she didn't have a gun and breathed something about getting out into my ear. I grabbed one of her hands with my left, reached up to the bar and found a glass. I took a breath and threw it to the other end of the room. Then we got up and ran. I didn't try to figure the twist. All I saw was a chance to get out of there, and I took it. She led me through a back door into a car parked in an alley. And the last I saw of the Palm House was its reflection in the rearview mirror. She drove to Mauna Lua Bay on the eastern end of the island and led me into a cottage on the beach. The lights were shaded, the drinks were handy, and the motif was pagan. I'd expected her to toss me some curves, but I was a little wrong as to type. Events so far hadn't pointed to the kind that go with whispering surf and moonlight through palm groves, but there they were.
You've got the shakes, haven't you?
The shakes are different on this end of the island.
Your eyes aren't as soft as you talk. How would they look if they were?
Wish I knew what you were up to.
Couldn't I just like you? Couldn't I try? Couldn't I be sick of the whole mess and everyone in it? Couldn't I be honest with myself for just a little while?
I don't know. Could you?
Maybe I was wrong about you being alive. Are you numb?
Just scared. I'm scared to death.
I am too, Phil. Maybe it's... Oh, darling. Your face, he hurt you, didn't he? He hurt you.
I don't remember. I don't remember a thing but being here. I never did figure out whether she was really being honest or not. But I didn't know her well enough to care a great deal. The drink she mixed had pineapple juice in them, and the atmosphere she created was quite peaceful. She made only one mistake. She looked at her wristwatch too often. If she hadn't, it might have been different, because I didn't hear a car pull up or footsteps outside or anything. I just saw a change in her. And I put my glass down and got ready. I wasn't quite sure who'd come through the door. It turned out to be Bradbury, but he was more surprised than I was. Claire was pointing a small automatic at him.
Claire, what's the meaning of this?
I've changed my mind.
You're in too deep to misuse my faith in you. You've put your pretty finger on your fiancé, Gregson, for an equally pretty remuneration.
Quit being fancy and stay where you are. I found somebody who pays more for faith than you do.
I don't understand you, Claire.
You wouldn't.
Since our friend Gallagher has seen to it that Cyril is no longer with us, we might bargain. There must be a meeting point. Certainly you aren't wasting your time on Carney here.
Turn around, fat boy. Who drove you out here?
Gallagher.
Yeah, fat boy, Gallagher. Isn't it a caution, Skipper, what we have to go through to keep our heads above water?
That's when the pagan cottage exploded, because that's when everybody realized who was sold out by whom. Red-colored Bradbury and I made a grab at Claire. I was close, but not close enough. She'd aimed at Gallagher, but Bradbury had been pulled in line instead. Two spots of crimson suddenly blossomed on that white linen suit. And when Red let go of him, he settled fatly on the carpet. And Claire disappeared through a side door.
Where's the dame, Skipper? I want to get my hands on her.
Let her go, Red.
I can't help it, Skipper. She made me mad. You know why?
Sure.
I don't think you do. Remember that opal earring you found in the Rockahanga? I wasn't mad till I found the other one on her dressing table.
What were you doing at her dressing table, man?
Making a deal, Skipper. Deciding that she double-crossed Cyril and Bradbury, I'd double-cross you. And she and I were going to live happily ever after. On what Constantino'd pay us for what you got from Lu Ji Shen.
Yeah. Should I congratulate you?
Skipper, if you knew what I went through making Cyril think I was double-crossing you, you would congratulate me.
Yeah. How about Cyril?
Yeah. How about Cyril? Skipper, what do you think of Honolulu as a port of call?
kind of mixed up with what I think of you as a chief mate. But I think if we try, we can get out of here before daybreak.
Considering what's happened since we got here, I think we better. Homicide won't like us in the morning.
An hour later, a sleepy crew had fallen to, and the Scarlet Queen sneaked away from her dock under power, out of Kapalama Basin, and headed out toward the still-dark western horizon. At dawn, we picked up the trade winds and cut the motor.
Wind port, sheet! Make sail!
The mainsail caught the sunrise wind, and the Scarlet Queen nodded at the morning and dipped her lee rail toward the sea.
To the jib sheets, men! Smartly now!
She answered the jibs, then the mizzen, and the wake boiled and bubbled under her stern. The clean sea air flushed the night out of me. It left a clear head to work out a balance between wind, sail, rudder, and fate.
She likes her sail, Skipper. She'll take it as long as we can stand up on the deck.
Let's not argue with her. She likes it as it is.
So do I. I can turn my back any way I want it. No automatic. That was a bad port, Skipper. What's next?
I'll try and do better. This one is called Muninjima. It's an island halfway between here and Japan.
All right. You find the island, and I'll find the woman on it.
That's a deal.
Want a drink, Skipper?
After you, mate. After you. Log entry, Catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Miles traveled, 3,035. Wind brisk, sky lowering. Sea choppy with high cross swell. Mainsail and mizzen reefed. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Carney, Master.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Log entry, the Catch Scarlet Queen. Position, 132 degrees 6 minutes west, 25 degrees 15 minutes north. Gyro compass course 275. Wind fresh, sky fair.
Remarks: departed island of Muninjima at 4:15 p.m. after unlogged movement of vessel. Reason for move: the Spaniard and the Lascar pirates. It was mid-afternoon, 15 days after we dropped the Hawaiian chain behind us, that we raised on the horizon the mountain peaks of Muninjima and our appetite for cool, sweet water and fresh fruit. The island lies some 500 miles east-northeast from the Bonin Group and had served as a Japanese base during the war. My pre-war charts, due to Jap secrecy, were incomplete and inaccurate, but just before sunset, when we stood around the southern tip, we did find the anchorage shown on them. It was a small half-moon bay protected by a line of breakers foaming in over a barrier reef. A little north of the center of the reef was our pass, wide enough for the Queen to slip through with good steerage way, friendly currents, and a light hand at the wheel. The water over the side took on a shallow look as we approached under power, and Gallagher went to the bow with a hand lead to measure the depth. He heaved the lead and lined forward, and his readings came rolling back.
By the mark!
Five fathoms, leaving a few to spare between keel and bottom.
Quarter left! Five!
But shallowing to less than five as we closed on the pass.
Five deep! Four!
4.5 fathoms, and the teeth of the coral started to show through the white froth of surf. And the currents washing back from it took the bow of the Queen from port and pushed.
By the mark! Oh, easy, skipper, easy.
I fought the wheel, and for a moment the scarlet figurehead seemed to rest on the reef. And then her head swung into the narrow channel. The shoulders of the reef swirled by us on each side.
No bottom at 15. No bottom at 15.
We were in the deep, quiet water. After our anchors were secured to the sandy bottom, Gallagher and I dropped into our dinghy and rowed toward a small pier that jutted out from the beach. At water level, we were able to see a cluster of half a dozen tin-roofed frame buildings set back from the shore and shaded by a grove of banyans and cocoa palms. We shipped our oars, started to make fast when we heard footsteps on the pier above us. I looked up. Straight into the muzzle of a .30-caliber rifle. A single watery China blue eye looked at me from behind the sights.
Go back to your ship!
Wait a minute. My ears stuffed up, or did you say go back to our ship?
Get your ship out of the bay! You are welcome here!
We need stores. This is no social call. We need water and fresh fruit, or we wouldn't have stopped.
He's drunk, Skipper. Here, let me take that pop gun away from him.
Wait a minute, Red. I think he means it. I think he's drunk. Red, are you hit?
No. But you're right, Skipper. He does mean it. The guy's stark raving nuts.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tolman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, broadest ship to sail the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week, a complete entry in the log. And every week, a league further in the strange voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
I stood there in the dory, looking up at the rifle and the man behind it. He was a dissipated 35... dressed in rumpled white duck trousers, no shirt, and a linen jacket streaked down the front with liquor and food stains. I was trying to figure how drunk he was and whether to make a try for the rifle myself when a movement shoreside caught my eye. And what a movement. She walked across that strip of beach as if she owned it.
Emmett! Emmett, what are you doing out here?
I don't want them ashore.
Give me that rifle. Give it here.
There's too many of them here already. Give me that gun. I'll shoot them and then the others.
You drunken fool. Go on. Go on or I'll use it on you.
All right. We haven't got trouble enough. We'll have it now.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. My husband has been ill. Please come ashore. You're more than welcome.
Well, Skipper, what are we waiting for?
That's a foolish question, Red.
I'm Nora Fairfield. Welcome to Moonin Jima. I'm sorry your first greeting was so unpleasant.
Yeah. What does your husband hunt with that cannon?
Men. He hates them.
But you don't, hmm?
Certainly not. That's why he does.
You said he was sick. What's wrong with him?
Nothing you have to worry about. But I think I should warn you. You aren't the only visitors on Moonin Jima. For an island that gets a steamer twice a year, we're doing well.
I didn't see any boat in the bay.
He wasn't as good a sailor as you are. He lost his ship on the reef a month ago.
He should have stayed home.
I'm beginning to think so myself.
I let Red fight his own way out of that one. Something up ahead of us interested me more at the moment. She'd taken us into the compound, and we were maybe 50 yards from the residence house. It was a typical island bungalow built up on stilts with a deep veranda across the front of it, but it wasn't the house that interested me. It was the group of bare-chested, brown-skinned East Indians squatting on their heels at the foot of the stairs. They looked as though their shore leave had lasted too long, and the curved knives they wore looked even meaner than their faces. Their eyes followed us as we went past them and into the house. Two men were sprawled in wicker chairs, and neither of them was her husband. The dark one, built along the lines of Rocky Graziano, grinned up at it.
Come in, hombres. The girl save you from the husband, too, no?
Captain Ramirez? Captain,
Carney. Phil Carney. And Mr. Gallagher, my first officer.
That's good enough.
I'm Dr. Mitchell. Thomas Mitchell. And you needn't tell me I looked the part. I've been told before.
Captain Ramirez is the man I told you about, Captain Carney. You men talk. I'll go see if my husband has enough bottles to keep him comfortable.
That was tough, losing your ship, Ramirez.
Mal suerte. Sometimes bad, sometimes good. This time bad. But who knows? Maybe things get better today.
Better. Better, he says. So that heathen crew of yours squatting on the heels outside, ready to sink those murderous knives into our backs if we so much as look cross-eyed at them?
Don't talk so much. Or I let you die on this island.
So, that's your plan. You think you'll buy your way out of here in the Scarlet Queen and leave me here to rot? As one Irishman to another, Mr. Carney, this pirate has not got the price of a passage.
You will have to excuse this doctor. Too much sun.
But if you take me, Carney, I have money in the States.
See, like the money you stole in Manacuari. He will be in jail before he pays.
Listen to the man. That boat onto the reef. Where do you think Captain Ramirez came by such a vessel? He stole it. And if you don't look sharp...
That is enough! Now I help you out, Doctor.
You're a little rough on your passengers, aren't you, Ramirez?
Him? He lived too long in the tropics. His brain is fried.
Maybe I should have butted in and saved him a sore jaw. The Scarlet Queen isn't taking on any passengers here. No room.
How big is your crew, Connie?
8 seamen.
That's funny. That's my crew, 8 men.
But our crew's carrying guns, Ramirez, in case you got any ideas. I didn't see anything but knives on those Lascars of yours.
Don't worry. I've got gun down in my bungalow. But to see here, I prefer the knife myself.
An 8-inch knife blade vibrated in the table in front of us. He was so fast I didn't even see where it came from, but there it was. He flashed us a smile full of oversized, overpolished teeth, then tugged the knife out of the wood and left.
This is a great island, Skipper. I'm glad you brought me here.
I just wish there was enough daylight and tide left to get us through that reef and out of here.
You think he's crazy enough to try and take the Queen?
I don't know, Red, but I'm not sleeping tonight. Neither are you. We'll keep our eye on him from two places. I'll row you back to the ship, and I'm staying ashore.
Wait a minute, Skipper. You're pulling your rank on me. I met her, too.
Forget it, Red. There's a husband in Ramirez in the picture, too. By the time I'd taken Gallagher to the Queen, broken out enough rifles to arm the crew, and rowed back to the island, night had fallen. and the first quarter moon was rising above the tops of the palms. I stopped when I hit the beach to get my bearings, decide which way to go. The threat was real enough, I was sure of that. Island shipwreck has turned sweeter characters than Ramirez to piracy. And the only way he or any of us could get out of there was on the decks of the Scarlet Queen. He was facing a crew of natives filled with frenzy for a home thousands of miles away. I was two legs out on a voyage with a $10 million prize at its destination, somewhere in the South Pacific. I'd fought before, and I was ready to fight again to keep the Scarlet Queen underway. I found a shadow, black in the faint moonlight, made my automatic handy at my waist, and started counting the minutes to the rise of sun and tide and the chance to get away from this place. The first 20 went by slowly and quietly. Then I heard a rustle in the brush behind me. I took a quick step sideways, snapped my automatic from my belt, and whirled to face the sound.
Oh, Captain Carney, you... Oh, why waste time on an act? You didn't surprise me. Came looking for you. You just startled me a little.
That puts us on common ground, except for the surprise. Why were you looking for me?
Because I've got to get away from Emmett. I want to go with you.
Talk sense. I can't take you with me.
You could, Phil. I don't know what's going to happen if I stay here with that decaying pig. I'm afraid I'll kill him. And I'm afraid he'll kill me. I've got to get away from here. Phil, look at me. Please, Phil, take me away from here.
You don't touch me, gorgeous. I can hear you saying the same thing the same way to Emmett about getting away from some other sucker. The only way you're going to get away from this island's on a tramp steamer. Huh?
Oh, Phil, I didn't mean that. Really, I didn't. I'm just going crazy, that's all. Phil, if you know what kind of a woman I am, can't we let it go at that? Then I couldn't hurt you. Phil. Phil, just for a minute, don't be afraid of me. I hit you, didn't I? Because you knew me. For a second, I hated you. But now I don't.
That's too bad. I feel more comfortable when you do. Anybody on any island would have given her A for effort and the same for her injured pride exit as she left my little plot of beach. I had half a hunch and maybe half a hope that she wasn't through pleading her case, that she'd be back. I sat there through the next hour trying to keep my mind on the Queen's cabin lights bobbing slightly out in the bay and to be ready for any movement towards her. It was only a split-second awareness of someone behind me, then a brown forearm was across my throat. I got a glimpse of a second figure slipping around in front of me. It was a turbaned Lascar. I kicked out at him. The last thing I remembered was the smell of chloroform and the cloth he jammed across my nose and mouth. And the deep, gasping breath my lungs forced me to take when the forearm relaxed a little. That and the sound of oars being put in oarlocks as somebody jumped into the dinghy and headed for the Scarlet Queen. Then the beach, the island, the whole world pulled away from me and I was too tired to care. First thing I coasted back on was the light that leaked in through my eyelids. Then the nausea. The throbbing in my head. I got my eyes open long enough to realize that the brightness was coming through a window. It was daylight. Broad daylight. That's when I tried to get up and fell back on the cot.
Ah, Carney. You're Irish, right from the brink of consciousness. Welcome back to a world of beauty.
Yeah. When I can remember of it, I'm sure I like it. Help me up, will you, Doc?
I've already helped you up. Hadn't been for me, you'd be well on your way to enriching the soil here on Mooninjima.
Hold it, Doc. Take me a while to collect these things.
Here, an ammonia ampoule. If you must think, this will help clear it up.
My ship, Doc?
It's gone. But you're wrong. When you came into the bay out there, and the situation here, it was no longer your ship. It was common property among desperate people. You and I happened to lose.
My mate Gallagher?
Who knows? Even common property himself shared between three or four types of flesh-eating fish.
My headache's stuck. I can't get very far beyond that yet.
I'll mix you something. They brought you here last night after they plucked you off the beach. With my chloroform, by the way. I was supposed to kill you neatly and silently. A slight swelling in your right arm was the point of injection. Due to some last-minute loyalty to our common heritage, I lightened the dose.
Thanks.
Here, drink this.
Yeah.
You might say that you have been 1 milligram away from a heathen grave. My payment, of course, was to be passage out of here with Ramirez. You see, I'm here as a result of my dishonesty to him, no doubt.
I feel sorry for you, Doc.
Indeed, I feel the same thing myself. Now, if you'll get up on your own 2 feet instead of lying there like a sick dog, I think you'll feel better. Get a breath of air if you can find some moving.
I was halfway to my feet before his last words got through the dizziness. There wasn't any air moving. I stumbled to the door and looked out. The palms and banyans were motionless. That meant one thing to me. The Scarlet Queen had to be under power to make any way. There wasn't enough breeze to even rattle her halyards. My wristwatch read 9 a.m., an hour and 10 minutes after the earliest tide she could have crossed the reef line. I knew that if I could get high enough, my ship would still be in sight. I didn't know why I should torture myself. Maybe it was like hiding in a corner to watch your girl marry another guy. But I pulled what was left of me together and started up the mountain to see where the Queen was going with somebody else. The summit was a jumble of rock. I scraped my way to the very top and stood there. 12 miles of rolling, folded hills and valleys stretched to the north. 3 miles of gentle slope to the south. And beyond, in a great circle, empty sea horizon. Not a sail. Not a mast. Not a speck in sight. Then I went down the mountain and back to the compound. It wasn't until then that I felt the new atmosphere of the place. Yesterday had been filled with chattering birds. Now there was nothing but the muttering of the surf against the reef, a leaden sky and humid, oppressive air. I went to the residence house to find Nora, hoping she'd know where Ramirez would make for. I found her room and knocked. There wasn't any answer. I knocked again, then I went in.
Like I say, Connie, mal suerte. But you look surprised to find me waiting for you.
After the build-up, what else?
What is the build-up when it all falls down?
Where's my ship?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew so well I was on it.
How did you miss after your boy smothered me on the beach?
I make big mistake. I warn you, don't ever trust a woman.
Thanks.
She took the dinghy right after my boys make the big mistake with you.
Yeah, big mistake. They should have smothered her.
I think maybe somebody else, too. Who is gone from the island? The girl, yes. Your chief mate, no? And your Scarlet Queen, I saw her go through the reef. What do you think?
From here, that's hard to figure. Where's your Lascar crew, behind me?
Don't worry. My boys crawl away someplace this morning. They say sunrise too red. They say wind going to blow today.
You should have crawled with them, Ramirez. This is going to be a good one.
See, I know this wind. I think we got out of this house quick. This is no good place for typhoon.
You got a better place in mind?
You make good question, Connie. I say the wind makes us good friends when we were good enemy before. We get out of this house.
In 15 minutes, the wind had taken over the rule of Muninjima and everyone on it. Ramirez and I struggled out of the house. Like cattle turned our backs to the blast and huddled together. Dependent upon one another. Fighting the power of it, dodging flying branches, wincing from the sting of sand and rain that came with the wind. Left no time to think of anything but survival. Suddenly we all became allies. Dr. Mitchell came out of his collapsing cottage, crawled to us on his hands and knees. And then behind us, half falling, staggering out of his coma and his quivering house, came Fairfield.
Ramirez! Why have you done with her? Why have you taken my wife?
Shut your drunken mouth!
What have you done with her? This is no time for wine.
Hey, Connie.
You tell me. Connie, where is she?
We don't know where she is.
If she's out in the
Yes, she'll try, but she'll never find it without me.
Find what?
The trail to the crater. But she'll try. Come along, we may find her on the way.
Oh, I didn't tell him where she was. If I had, he'd probably have traded the whole thing for another bottle. And if he knew where there was shelter, I needed him. I nursed him like a sick baby. We started foot by foot, yard by yard across the compound, and up the slope toward the mountain, sometimes standing, sometimes crawling, sometimes flat on our faces. The wind screamed in, bending 50-foot palms like they were blades of grass, forcing them over until they splintered, and their tops crashed and skittered across the ground. Fairfield, wait a minute! Mitchell's been hurt!
Never mind! Come on!
Well, get him, Connie! He won't ask you any questions about it! We will go back to his dream!
I looked back at Mitchell. A 15-foot length of palm tree had smashed into the ground. And already the wind-whipped brush was drifting up over his body. To bury him in the heathen grave he'd saved me from. We crossed one swell of hill, then another. And finally, with the wind even wilder with the altitude, Razorback Ridge, dropped over into the shelter of the lee side.
That's one devil, that wind. Maybe both of us are lucky to be here instead of drowning on your massless hulk, Connie.
I don't think much of the choice myself.
Well, I do. Right now, I'm glad I trusted that woman.
Shut up!
What for Fairfield? You think he doesn't know what kind of...
Shut up!
It's all right, Connie. I know what it means. But I'd like to find her. The trail leads down to the beach at the bottom of the crater.
It was a steep trail, and now and then when we'd go through a clearing in the dense growth, I began to get a picture of the place. It was a volcanic crater, and the sheer sides made a complete circle with a circumference of about a mile and a half. We were about three quarters of the way down when I caught the glimmer of water. Another 100 yards, and we broke out of the brush and hit the beach. That's when we all stopped. That's when the whole thing took on the feel of a dream. But I was awake, and there with just her bow in sight in the tiny inlet was the Scarlet Queen. I didn't have time to reach for any answers because suddenly with the ship back on the scene, we were no longer allies. Our common enemy was forgotten, and Ramirez and I were face to face. But he had a knife and I had an empty holster.
I think this is far enough, Curry.
Yeah, for one of us it is, Ramirez.
Why don't you think this way? You take the island and the woman, and I don't hurt you. The beautiful tropic night, Carney. You'll be happy, I tell you.
You've been in the tropics too long yourself, Ramirez. That's fever talk.
No, I tried to make it easy for you. I go on your ship. I tell your mate you die like Mitchell in the storm. What you think?
Well, you make it sound good, Ramirez. You make it sound... Stay out of the Fairfield! The only thing I knew about his knife draw was that he used his right hand, and that's what I made for. Let go! Come on! Watch! Nudged his head over with my foot, and he didn't move. I didn't know how long it had taken, but it was long enough to make some changes in the scenery. Our dinghy was pulled up on the beach. Nora was standing there. Next to her was Gallagher.
I thought maybe you'd need some help, Skipper, but you did all right, didn't you?
I got a few things out of my system, but I got a few more.
Now, take it easy, Skipper. You're tired, so calm down.
How'd you get here?
Wait a minute, Skipper. Come here, you...
Fred, please, Fred.
She told me you sent her to the Queen last night, that you were selling her passage to Kobe.
Nora! What's it saying?
Never mind, Fairfield.
I believed her, because she put me wise to Ramirez. He and his Lascars tried to board the Queen at dawn, but we were ready for him. She said you knew it, too, and were hiding out till it was over.
You don't know how right she was.
And then this morning, when I got a load of that typhoon sunrise, she told me about this place, and we came around, and a good thing, too.
Yeah. That's what puts the whole thing off balance. The Queen would never have lived in that bay on the windward side.
What's the rest of it, Skipper?
I was supposed to be dead, and she was sick of Ramirez.
Phil, Red, please let me say something.
But you, Gallagher,
You're supposed to sail off into the sunset with her.
Bill, listen to me.
You mean I can go into the sunset with
you? Wait a minute. You'll have to choose between her and me, Skipper.
Well, when the chips are down, you're really more attractive, Red.
Glad to hear that, Skipper. I'm blushing with pride.
And now shall we leave the fair fields to their island? What's left of it?
Yeah. And to their Ramirez. What's left of him? Yeah, Skipper. I think we've wasted enough time on Muninjima.
A few hours before sunset, the outside circle of the typhoon had passed, and we headed out of the crater basin. I didn't bother to take soundings, but I did sketch an addition to the faulty charts of the island. Under power, we threaded through a narrow channel that the Japanese Navy had dredged from the almost landlocked basin to the open sea. We rounded a rocky point and swung the scarlet figurehead on our bow until she looked out on the course she'd been born to follow. Neither of us knew where that course would lead. When we were free of the rocks and I felt the breeze on my right cheek, I cut the motor.
Stand by to make sail!
The peaks of Moon Inn still held us in their lee, but the edges of the northeast trade sweeping around them were enough.
With forward sheet, make sail!
The mainsail reached up the mast and took hold, and the cloying land smell was swept away and replaced by fresh sea air.
To the jib sheet's bend!
The jibs ran up, then the mizzen, and the Queen settled into her familiar position with her port rail inclining toward the green water.
Is she sea kindly, Skipper?
You're doing fine, mate. We'll take her a little closer on when we make the north end of the island.
That's an island I want to see sink behind the stern.
Why you? You didn't have a tough time.
Oh, you don't know, Skipper. That woman, she thinks all men are the same kind of man as her kind of woman. If you know what I mean.
I think I do, and it reminds me of a friend of mine on Motomachi Street in Kobe. We'll have to look her up.
Oh, no, not me. A glass of rice beer is as far as I go into Kobe. Drink, Skipper?
Yeah. Hey, what's this? There's lipstick on this bottle.
Sure. What do you think she was? A savage? Lipstick never hurt you, did it? Ah, go on. Have a drink, Skipper.
After you, mate. After you. Log entry, catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Miles traveled, 6,215. Mainsail and mizzen reefed, ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Thank you again for listening, and please don't forget to follow, review, and rate.
Save big this holiday season,
All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.